Representative Haley Stevens recently won re-election by one of the narrower margins in our congressional delegations. She bested her Republican challenger, Eric Ashaki, by about 3%, a difference of some 10,000 votes. That means Michigan's 11th district, long in Republican control, is going to stay in Democratic hands for at least a little bit longer. This is one of the most closely watched contests in the state. Haley Stevens has made business issues and health care the cornerstones of her short time in office, including the fight against COVID. And she joins us now. Haley Stevens, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you so much.
I know that you have been closely following the development of a vaccine to combat COVID. How soon do you think one of the vaccines that is edging closer to regulatory approval, how soon do you think that might be available to the public?
I'm very optimistic that we will see availability to the public of the vaccine by the end of this year. I'm actually getting a briefing on the update for Operation Warp Speed. And this is going to be complicated to get everybody vaccinated. One of the first things that I did as a member of Congress was to invest and vote for the funding to develop a vaccine that was way back at the beginning of this year. But then as we moved towards bigger pieces of legislation, particularly the CARES Act, and you're hearing the voting bells going off right now in my office.
That's what that is? I've never heard one before.
Yeah. Yes. So when members of Congress do any interview, which we now will do from our office, anywhere in the Capitol, the bells go off, and it's actually, we're not voting, it's just that debate has commenced on the floor, that the floor is now back open for debate and addresses.
So I assume when you say that you think that the vaccine will be publicly available by the end of the year, that's probably with the caveat that our healthcare systems will be first in line.
Look, there's certainly a lot of priorities in terms of how we want to get this vaccine distributed and who we want to have get access to the vaccine. There's certainly going to be a round of people who I think are going to be first in line, maybe because of their own willingness. And look, it's not that we are days away from getting this vaccine distributed. We are now at a qualifying place for FDA approval. Once we get the FDA approval and then we get the go ahead for distribution, there's an entity funded through our federal government, a national institute. It's part of President Obama's Manufacturing USA Network. It is a National Institute of Biopharmaceutical Research. I got them several million dollars of funding during CARES Act and worked very closely with their director and stayed in regular communication in terms of the vaccine distribution. We can think about this in terms of the flu shot. You know, there's a lot of people who go right away as soon as you're able to get your flu shot. Then there are people who are stragglers, and then there's people you got to remind. And then there are some people who don't even get the flu shot, right? And so that's going to be something as well that we will see evolve with this vaccine.
What do we know about the longer-term prospects of vaccination eradicating the virus altogether? Is that something that is even being discussed?
Well, there's certainly a lot of hope for what the vaccine means, but there are some questions around what will give way to the end of social distancing practices and the wearing of masks. We're still in a stop the spread phase. I have read a variety of articles, some that speak to a longer term situation with this virus and its implications on society. And then I've read other articles, scientific reviewed articles that paint to, you know, a picture of optimism, particularly with this vaccine. One of the things that we need to see, though, is we need to see about the antibodies and how long they're able to last in a person. Because it could be similar to the flu shot, that you're getting your flu shot and then you're getting your coronavirus shot every year, depending on how long the antibodies last. That's actually a question I have.
This is a time at which Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's teams are trying to get ready to the extent that they can for the White House. You worked on President Obama's transition team in 2008. What can you tell us about the significance of what's happening right now?
Well, it's certainly a different transition where you can't congregate and be in the normal office setting. I have some very fond memories of being on presidential transition and it being a shadow White House and seeing the president-elect walking through and being able to exchange with colleagues. These are complicated tasks of selecting the right people for big jobs. I was working on the Senate confirmations of cabinet appointees, and there's a lot that goes into it. And I certainly relied on that office setting as well as the relationships that get formed in those settings. And so just like we saw, though, with President-elect Biden's campaign, they have figured out how to do this. They ran a large multi-state national presidential campaign through remote channels. I remember talking to various people on the campaign who were saying, I've actually never even met my colleague in person because we've been remote since March. So there's certainly, you know, a reliance on the video technology that goes into, you know, interviewing or exchanging, as well as a reliance just on being methodical. And right now, what we're seeing with the Biden administration is the core team coming out, a group of experts. The appointment of Ron Klain was heavily lauded. This is a tremendous individual with great expertise. I have seen Ron Klain in action. Remember when he was in charge of the task force on Ebola. And I also remember some people being a little skeptical of Mr. Klain in that role. And boy, did he best everyone's expectations. And so we've got an incoming chief of staff. We've got other core senior staff. One of my own colleagues, Congressman Cedric Richmond from Louisiana, is going to be in a senior role at the White House. He's a senior advisor to the president-elect. And, you know, we're going to see about these incoming cabinet appointments. But one of the things that I have remained very inspired by with this administration is a real focus and a real plan. You know, the first thing they did was announce their coronavirus task force, heavily science-based coronavirus task force, as it should be, a public health focus, as well as being followed up by a real plan for our economy and economic recovery.
I wanted to ask, Joe Biden certainly doesn't seem to be at a loss for how to get his White House up and running, but at the same time, he's not getting full benefit of White House cooperation and recognition. There's been some conversation about what that means in the foreign policy sphere. Do you see other ways in which it might have an impact?
Absolutely. Look, the outgoing administration has got a responsibility to do an exit memo, to do the leave behinds. One of the classic examples that we've heard frequently this year has been about the Obama administration passing along to the Trump administration their pandemic preparedness plan. You heard outgoing White House official from Obama's administration, a gentleman named Chris Liu, repeatedly saying, I met with Trump transition officials on that pandemic plan. But it's not just about the pandemic. We're looking at counterfeit terrorism in the Department of Treasury. We're looking at the running of our Medicare system. I actually submitted to the Congressional Record a statement asking my colleagues to join me in pushing for a peaceful transition, no matter the outcome of the election. I wasn't being presumptuous, but I was saying we've got to put our career federal civil servants who help run agencies, do that, the testing of for our food safety, veterans benefits. I mean, the government needs to work, and it's run by a president, and you get a very small window right now for these presidential transitions. You know, a century ago, the new president wasn't sworn into March. Now the election happens in November, you go through the holidays, and before the end of January, you've got a new president. It happens very quickly, and there's a lot at stake.
So we'd be remiss if we didn't discuss the election in acknowledging that you've won your reelection. So congratulations are in order.
Well, thank you so much.
That victory did come on a relatively slim margin, around 3%. How do you interpret those results?
Well, one, I'd like to enthusiastically remind everybody about the historic nature of our election, our 2020 election in Michigan, just record voter turnout. I represent just a little over 700,000 people in Michigan's 11th district, from Auburn Hills to Troy, down to Livonia, Canton, Plymouth, and into, you know, Novi and Milford and South Lyon. And we had almost 450,000 people vote in this election. That is a win for American democracy. Some of our precincts at 90% turnout. And look, I will tell everybody who's listening today and who has questions about this in the future, is that I am here in Congress to represent the interests of this district. I have a huge tent of independents and Republicans and people of color, our Indian American community, who came and stepped up, and obviously a whole heck of a lot of Democrats who stepped up to be a part of my campaign and to give me this second term. And this was a big feat for a Democrat in a Republican leaning district, as the only House incumbent that had multi-million dollar super PAC attacks from GOP groups kind of weighing in on my race. That was a little bit different than last time, and certainly being the only House incumbent in Michigan experiencing those attacks. And look, our message was able to resonate, and that's a message of economic prosperity for everyone, for good public schools, and standing up for good quality health care for all Michiganders.
At the same time, I'm sure you've been following what happened with the Wayne County Board of Canvassers and the on-again, off-again dispute in election results. What is your read on a responsibility to the truth of the election results, and also to people in communities who may be Trump supporters who don't believe those results?
Well, I'm heavily disturbed by the actions of the Wayne County Board. First, a split vote at non-certified elections. I'm immediately hearing from our local electeds who now aren't going to be able to transition our new municipal officers into their roles, our clerks who have validated their process, and in particular in Wayne County. Wayne County is not just Detroit. It is also home to suburban communities. I think that Detroit was incredibly offended by these actions. And look, Joe Biden paid credence to this in his acceptance speech, which is, he said, "I know what it feels like to lose an election. And I want to let you know that I'm still going to be working for you and willing to listen to you." Now, one of the things that I have spent some time on in Congress, in addition to working on election security, is also the proliferation of manipulated videos that take place largely online. And this is something that we have seen in this instance of this election. There are a lot of rumors spreading. However, Joe Biden won the state of Michigan by over 150,000 votes. So, you know, there's not a lot of discrepancy here. This is very different than what we saw in 2016 with, you know, a 10,000 vote margin that really wasn't disputed at this level. And I look to the words of former President Barack Obama in terms of respecting the sanctity of elections and the democratic will. I think that this goes beyond just being shenanigans. It's certainly really troubling to our democratic institutions, as well as all the people who came out and voted. And look, I have people who voted for Donald Trump who voted for me. I understand that. I was not surprised by the huge amount of votes that came out for voters who came out for Donald Trump. There's certainly a lot of them in my district. And that is something to be proud of in terms of his vote total. And there's also a role that former presidents play in American life. And that role is, one, to respect a peaceful transition and a democratic transition, and two, you know, to contribute to the ongoing nature of our democracy and some of the traditions that are so important to American life.
Congresswoman Stevens, thanks for making some time to talk to us today.
Oh my gosh, thank you, April. Nice to talk with you too. Have a great one.
You take care.